For the second time this season, there is no opponent to talk about for Ohio State. Doesn't matter because we probably weren't going to do that anyway. Welcome to Talkin' Tuesday. That is 10 TV's television's Adam King. I am merely Austin Ward on the beat. Talkin' Tuesday. We will hear from Ryan Day for the first and only time of this second off week, improvement week, enhancement week. I don't know what he's going to call it.
Bye week?
No, I don't think he'll call it that.
I know he won't call it that.
But there is something going on, Adam.
Ooh.
The country seems to finally be talking more about Ohio State, talking more about Julian Sand. I think they're catching on that this team's pretty good.
Here's where I think you're wrong.
Okay.
Okay. You think everybody's catching on. I think everybody has run out of other teams. The rest of us knew Ohio State was the best team in the country. The rest of us knew that Julian Sand was, if not the best quarterback, one of the top two quarterbacks in the country. Everybody else was just grasping at teams. They're like, okay, it's got to be Miami. It's got to be Texas Tech. What about A&M? And then they're like, you know what? We really might just have to give it to the team that won the national title last year and continues to just dominate and obliterate teams.
Yeah, nation's longest winning streak for Ohio State, and picking up right where they left off at the end of last season when they won a national championship. And now head into this one with no opponent on Saturday. I think it comes at a pretty good time. We can ask Ryan Day about the health of the team and who needs a chance to get back and healthier. I know that he wouldn't really answer that.
No.
I'd say that's maybe a conversation for 2 hours before the Penn State kickoff when the Buckeyes get back. But I think that, you know, more than anything, and there will be questions on Tuesday. Is this a good time? Is this a bad time? Do you want to keep the momentum going? Those are traditional off-week questions. This, to me, like I would just say it does come at a good time for this team to regroup and reload for November.
I really like where this falls because I do feel like it's a harsh breaking point in the season here. The crazy thing that I continue to think about is when I looked at the schedule, I remember thinking, you just got to get to that second bye week because goodness gracious, you got to go on the road to Washington. You got Texas to open the season. You got at Illinois and at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I was like, that's a slugfest. Boy, was I wrong.
Three road games out of four to start the Big Ten schedule.
That's
still a wear and tear on your body.
Yes, it is. So I do think it comes at the perfect time. And then the other thing, you're like, well, then you got to come out and play number two Penn State. Okay, maybe not. But for Ohio
they are State, number two. That's for sure.
Yes. That is, ooh, good pun. If I'm looking at this bye week and I'm looking at Ohio State, the one thing that I look throughout the whole year that has actually been so helpful for the Buckeyes, and I kind of hated it for the longest time, is that they only focus on themselves. And when you hear a coach say that, you're like, hey, you're going up against a big game. And Ryan's like, well, we're focused on ourselves. I'm like, okay, well, that's not what we want to hear. But at this point, I think it's incredibly helpful because I do think that Ohio State is just playing against themselves, if that makes sense. They're challenging themselves before a start of a game and seeing how they respond to their own set challenge. They don't really care what the final score is. We've talked a lot about that. But I felt like that Wisconsin game was a perfect example of it where the Badgers said, we're going to challenge this run game and you're going to have to beat us with the pass. And Ohio State said, boy, I don't think you know who we have as wide receivers. And so they challenged themselves, as Ryan said, to put more on Julian's plate, to work on a couple of those explosive plays. They passed that challenge. That was the talk of that week. So I think moving forward here, until that last week of the season, it's going to be about Ohio State presenting themselves with challenges and saying, how do we respond to this? The biggest one right now, it's got to be that run game. And how do we get that 1 yard?
Yeah, so that's where you'll begin. Because I think the assumption is it's a Talking Tuesday, and we're going to talk to Ryan Day at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center this, you know, later on Tuesday and be like, what do you want to get done? That's the obvious question.
Yeah,
do you think that he'll say
yes,
run?
Yeah. I guess that is my question, Ryan, and I kind of answered it there before I asked it.
You already knew the answer?
I did it in reverse order, which is, what is the one thing? And I hate asking Ryan questions like this because you don't get anything, understandably, when you say, like, what is the one thing? And he's like, well, we have a lot of things.
Everything.
Yes, and he's right. Like, there's not just one thing.
The issues
are always there. But the overarching circle, the number one thing that has to be on that board is the right side of the offensive line and the short yardage run game. Because my concern level is only a 5. Maybe with the short yardage, it's getting to a 7. But
oh, really?
Yeah, I think this Wisconsin game, I still think Ohio State is challenging themselves and making it tough on themselves. They're trying to spread it out and then run it up the middle. They're trying to do all these different things to see how they respond to them. But I do think we still haven't seen an explosive run, although Ryan says they're not scheming them up, which is fine. But we also, the only thing that's solace in the back of my head, and I think lie detector Ryan Day, I think if you asked him right now, If it's third and fourth and one, and you need the yard to win a national title,
throw it to Jeremiah.
I don't think he throws it to Jeremiah. I think he should. I think he runs a QB sneak.
Yeah.
I think he runs the tush push.
Seems like the QB sneak's getting all pretty effective.
Yes. And so I think that is the only thing that's giving me solace is that you don't run the QB sneak against Wisconsin because you want to challenge your guys to get the yard the old fashioned way.
We did see it once, correct?
Yeah. I think, yeah, you're right. But like that was what with like fourth and inches. But in theory, you want to challenge CJ Donaldson to get that yard, to get those 2 yards. But when the going gets tough and the end of the game is about winning, not about how many points you put up or challenging yourself. Like when they thought I was going to say the
I
end of the day.
You were, I,
no,
I thought
what I was trying to say
one.
Is at some point they're going to get to a place.
You saw the twinkle in my eye.
Yeah, like, when they get to Michigan, that it's no longer about themselves.
Yeah.
It's about winning a football game. And that's where I do think they can still turn it on. So my question to Ryan would be, how much are you not leaning on the QB sneaks and not leaning on a little fullback handoff there to the tight end?
Yeah.
Just because you want to challenge your guys.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting dynamic. And one reason why the way he structures this off week, I think, is so interesting to me and important for the long haul of this year is that you would like, after playing 7 games, I think, to give some players a break. And there are definitely, you know, guys who deserve an opportunity to put their feet up and rest and recover that are playing, you know, Caden McDonald. Hey, buddy, take the week off.
You're good.
Like, if you want to get down and go see your family in Georgia right now, go ahead. I think he's earned that opportunity. Now, will he do that? No, of course not. But there are players on this team that say this is a lighter week of practice. Balancing that with what you're talking about, let's say if the issues are isolated to the run game or special teams improvements, like those players, like a Josh Padilla at right guard, who we've seen increasingly involved over the last couple of weeks, here's a competitive week. You know, can you go earn that job during an off weekend practice? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. If Caden McDonald is not out there, are you getting the absolute best good on good look for him? I think, you know, the first improvement week, the first off week, and the way that Ohio State was ramping up post Texas with a new training camp, those were really physical practices, to my understanding. And I think that they went one on one and they tried to, you know, get a lot of bloody stuff done on a Tuesday and they worked throughout that week. I think the Thursday practice was really physical for them.
You're saying bloody stuff because they call it Bloody Tuesday, not in like a British term, correct?
Correct. No.
They got some bloody stuff.
Those are different things. Bloody stuff, bloody work.
Okay. Just make it sure for the listeners at home.
Yeah, well, it's a great point. It's an important correction. And thank you for doing so because those are two very different things.
That's what I'm here to do.
Yeah.
Just correct you.
I appreciate that.
Thank I know you. That's what you want.
Keep me in line. Yeah. But I think that you look at that and you say, what's the balance this week? And how much do you want to get done? How much can you get done? Are there personnel changes in the works? Which is not something that 7 weeks in you would think is really up for debate, but I think it clearly is at a couple spots. And there's been only one that they continue to rotate and tinker with throughout the entirety of the starting lineup, throughout the duration of the regular season. So, you know, could we see that change? It certainly feels like they're working towards that.
The other question that I would ask Ryan, and we're on the run game, so I'll stick there, is and we kind of talked about this, but I actually saved this for the bye week.
Off week.
The improvement week. if this is nobody has a grade next to their name, are Isaiah West and Bo Jackson the two starting running backs? If you come out of this off week and nobody is anything.
Same. You don't know that they're seniors. You don't
know
that they're freshmen.
James Peoples. You don't know that CJ Donaldson is, you know, a veteran. Do you come out of this and say, it's time to lean? Here's the home stretch. It's time to go with Bo and Isaiah. And I mentioned this in snap judgments after the Wisconsin game. It felt like those were real reps for Isaiah West. It did not feel like, hey, let's get these guys in and get them some chance. No, that felt like, and they did it against Illinois too, where Isaiah West is out there in critical snaps. So I do think that this running back room, CJ Donaldson's great. I think CJ Donaldson will continue to be a part of this offense. I would challenge James Peoples. He's losing ground on what his role is in this offense. And that's tough. And he's a great guy. He's a great leader of this team. As a younger guy, he's been around and knows that. But Bo Jackson has shown what he can be at his peak. Isaiah West so much excitement around him right now. So how do you keep them off the field knowing that when they're on, the spark is higher, but also balance the fact that you have to, veterans are veterans for a reason. So that would be my question is, if you could wipe everything away, who are your starting two running backs?
Yeah, and I think we mentioned this really about a month ago, Adam, that as you were starting to see the ascension of Bo Jackson, it was like, could Ohio State play three running backs? And you could say, yeah, you could, but it gets more difficult for several reasons. The pace that Ohio State plays means there's not going to be a great chance for anybody in a three-headed monster in the backfield to get that consistency, that feel of the game, that build that momentum within it. I was like, you can find ways to use James Peoples, CJ Donaldson, and Bo Jackson. Is that the best use of the limited amount of resources available to you? If you're playing 60 snaps a game at best, and you have to get it to Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate and Max Clair and Brandon Ennis on down the road, like, can you really do that? And the answer at that point was like, no. And you can, now you're adding a fourth person into this mix. And we did see all of them get involved in some form or fashion. And it's pretty easy to zoom out and say, CJ Donaldson can be your specialized red zone or short yardage back. He's been pretty good at that. He's got 7 touchdowns through 7 games. You take that. James Peoples has been able to make some plays out of the backfield as a receiving threat. He got a first down on Saturday at Wisconsin. And then you see what Isaiah West is doing. You know, we know what Bo Jackson's potential looks like. So yeah, there's a way that you could put all these pieces out there and use all four. That's not practical, and it's not realistic for the way that Ohio State is going to be attacking it. You want depth, and I understand Ohio State wanting to keep all of them involved so they can all continue to grow and improve. And if injury strikes or dip in production or whatever else, you have that available to you. But in a talent-equated game, in a matchup game, in a playoff game, can you play all four? I would say no. So your question then is like, is it Bo and Isaiah? I think they have to be having that discussion because these next 2 weeks are one of the last times that you could like dive into getting that done.
Exactly. You're exactly right. And much like with Josh Padilla. The other question that I have with Ryan Day, I want to ask about Julian. We're kind of on the offense, so I'm staying on the offense. If you could, and maybe this is lie detector Ryan as well, did you ever imagine this is where he would be? Did you ever envision that through 7 games in the second bye week, he would look like what is just a perfect, I mean, Julian saying is ridiculous. And somebody commented, I read the comments, that we should stop using the term generational talent. But I think there's a world when this is all done that like Julian saying is one of those guys that 10, 15, 20 years from now, we're like, oh my gosh, we didn't realize what we had in that moment. And his ability to place the ball, his decision-making has been so just impressive for a young guy. So a two-part question, did you ever think this is where you'd be? And if you had to change your offensive approach to the fact that this is where you are with a quarterback, because I'm sure when you're sitting down, not that they draw out the season, but when you're sitting down and kind of coming up with what this team's going to look like, the identity of this team, you're probably not thinking, well, we're going to put a large load on this redshirt freshman quarterback halfway through the season, and he's going to be our leader and our star. So
he's going to go to Wisconsin and throw for 393 yards.
So do you think they're coming out of the bye week like, okay, the training wheels are gone. Like, that's it. Yeah. Like, let's go play football. We're coming out here. We know what we have in Carnell, Jeremiah, and Julian saying, obviously, they still want to include Max Claremore. They want it. Will Kazmarek, I love that little play, the little pop pass.
A little wrinkle there in the red zone.
Yeah, wrinkle in the red zone. That's what you need. I just wonder if Ryan has had to reassess, like, his own preparation. And he might say, like, we don't prepare for, like, we don't come in with a predetermined thought. But I feel like you would have, because I did. I'm sure you did. I, like, the sky for Julian Sayin was this at the end of the year in my mind. So where in the world are we going?
Yeah, and sometimes Ryan Day will get to that and tackle it and address it head on, which is that he tries to say that they don't have expectations, but there was a lot of conversation in August about when you get to the opener, you get to the start of the season, you're trying to find out if the assumptions that you made were correct. Now you can say, are assumptions and expectations the same thing? I mean, yes and no. We don't need to deal with the semantics part of that, but to go back to your question, if you're injecting that truth serum, I think it would be...
It's a lie detector. Okay, we don't.
What if you give them both so that you can get like the true answer?
We don't need both. It's a lie detector. We trust the lie detector. All right.
Okay. Those can be beat.
All you young kids trying to come up with new ways. Lie detectors worked for like 100 years.
I saw on Netflix that you can beat it.
That's what I heard. You just got to be real calm.
Yeah. Or super sporadic with your emotions.
Oh, that's good. Well, and that's
just throw it up. So I don't know. It's on Netflix.
Somebody's taking notes right now. Like,
it's got to be true, right? Yeah. If it's on a Netflix 100%. Documentary. What was I saying? So when you asked him, I think is important to add to that, because I think they wouldn't have taken Julian Sain from Alabama if they didn't know that that was in him, that he had the athletic tools, the accuracy, the decision-making, the processing, all the stuff that we talked about throughout the offseason to play at Ohio State and thrive. But not there. There were certainly times in March and April, and again, this is lie detector / truth serum, whichever method we choose, that nobody in the Woody was completely sold on anybody in that quarterback room.
I think there was times in August.
And they did not name that early in August. They got to the midway part of camp. I think we could all see where it was trending and where it was going to go, and that's not hindsight. I mean, we all said from the start, you're going on the ceiling. Julian Sain is the guy, and you hope that you can get him there. You're trying to manage the way through Texas and all that stuff. Like those conversations were real, and they happen. But to your point, it's, okay, when did you realize it, and is this ceiling already higher than you might have projected?
I think that and how does that change? How does that change what you guys
I don't think they thought they'd throw 42 times at Wisconsin.
100%. It looked like Dwayne Haskins against Purdue a little bit of just, you know, letting it fly.
Except with a defense on the field.
Well, that's fair. Dwayne Haskins could not play defense against that Purdue game.
Yeah.
Or the Maryland game. Both teams.
They didn't try to have Dwayne cover Rondale Moore.
They really should have. They really should have. Might have gone better.
Couldn't have gone worse.
That's accurate. When you look at this defense now, they have given up the fewest points of any defense since 2000. Could be beyond 2000. But
that's as far as your research
went? That's as far as the graphic that I read went back. So when you think about that, I would ask Ryan, and I feel like I need Ryan to tell me, not in like coach, like I don't even need to ask him on the podium, but like, well, what do I do with this defense? Like, how do I correctly assess a game anymore?
Yeah.
Like, I know we have a job to do with Penn State, with Rutgers, with Purdue, and with UCLA. We have four games where I can't assess a football game by getting upset if they give up a touchdown. That's not a fair assessment of...
Standard is the standard.
The standard is the standard. And so 7 points will not be allowed. I understand once you get to the last game of the season and beyond, does not matter what happens there.
Win the game.
Just win. Just win, baby. But I would ask Ryan, what are you looking for? Like, when you sit down on the tape and you look at the defense, they got a shutout. We joke, we laugh. We know what happened in the fourth quarter of Illinois. Frustrated with how that ended, but you're fine with it. Where are you standing up and slamming the table and saying, this can't happen? Are you doing that?
Well, they had a couple penalties, Adam.
And so how do you grow from that?
Yeah.
Because the one thing that has been, I've never seen a defense this dominant this early in the season to the point where I don't know how you challenge. I talk about challenges a lot because that's what Ohio State's doing, is challenging themselves against themselves. How do you challenge a defense that just shut out a team, that's given up the fewest points, that has dealt with injuries, slid guys in, moved things around, and looked just unbeatable? What is Ryan's expectation between now and taking the field in Ann Arbor to know that this defense is growing? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, you would think even with as many guys as Ohio State had to replace that it would have taken longer for Ohio State to get to this point. Now, they were ready to go week one against Texas, and they were dominant, and I think we could still go back retroactively and question the officiating on the touchdown that they gave up, and maybe they're over that and past it, but how rapidly Caden Curry, Kenyatta Jackson, Arvell Reese, Jalen McClain have adapted to these prominent roles should not go unappreciated or unnoticed. It's true that they were in the system and they've all got the same position coaches they had before, and there was a lot of carryover, and Matt Patricia has enhanced what was already in place. All those things can be true. But the way that the pieces have fit together is remarkable, and the way that Matt Patricia is orchestrating them to put them in different spots and unlock another level is amazing. There's a million words that you could use, but it's so impressive and it is historically dominant. You do have to sustain that, but that then shifts the question to, all right, well, how do you improve that? It is still about getting the depth pieces ready. And you could see that in the fourth quarter against Illinois when there was that lapse and it was like, nope, get the starters back out there. You know, they did march it down Wisconsin on the last drive before, you know, Aaron Scott's like, I'm going to put a person into the ground and 6 feet below it to end this
game.
Not
only into the ground, also into Ryan Day.
Yeah, just pretty, it was pretty remarkable hit there to keep using that word. But it's, I'm running out of adjectives to describe how great this Ohio State defense is. But that's the next piece, is that they have limited the reps. I think that has helped avoid some of the wear and tear and needing to, you know, adjust on the fly. But you'd still like to see, you know, Peyton Pierce has been really good when he's got out there. Maybe he can take 10 to 15 more reps. Riley Pettijohn filling in, or looking at
Riley Pettijohn.
Yeah, looking at Jason Moore. Edric Houston got back out there healthy on Saturday. I thought, you know, some of that energy was back for him. Like, physically, you're trying to get healthy, but also mentally recharge. I think he's doing that. It's like, there's still some pieces that you can sustain, because once you get to late November and beyond, some of these opportunities where Ohio State just gets to dictate that they're going to play 50 to 60 snaps and that's it is going to be a lot more difficult. You're going to have more defenders be able to carry that load once you get, I think, into potentially January. So I think that's still it. It's been a depth conversation since January at the end of last season, and that's the one I think that they'll still be trying to hammer home. It's why we're looking at these reps and who needs them and how competitive will they be? Why that's interesting to me on a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week.
All right. Yeah, you got my final question here, and you kind of teed it up here because I've been thinking about this for a while. I love what Ohio State is doing on offense. Before the game, I predicted they scored 38 points. They scored 34. Thank you. That's all I wanted. Is it too much to ask? No, I'm saying that because I just think that's where they're going to live this year. Yeah. I was proud of myself that I have given up on the 50 points.
Okay,
like, it took a lot for me to get out of the 50-point cloud or the 49 and, like, come down to reality. This is where they're going to live, and they're very happy with it.
It's a nice neighborhood.
It's a nice neighborhood. It's a beautiful neighborhood. Cul-de-sac. They got a basketball court in the middle. It's awesome. But at some point, they're going to go up against a team where they either, A, want to let it fly like they did against Tennessee and Oregon, or B, the game dictates them playing more up-tempo to score more. How much does that affect the defense? The defense this year has not had to deal with that. I mean, I would be very interested to see, other than maybe removing the turnovers, the amount of rest the defense has had in a game. Because
they barely played on Saturday at Wisconsin.
That's what I'm saying. And so, like, when you think about that, does that worry you at all? That, like, okay, when we ramp this up, this defense has to be prepared that they may be out there twice as much than they were in the Wisconsin game.
Yeah.
If things are, and that's if things are going well on offense. If you're able to move the ball quicker and score, and you got to get back out there.
Yeah.
So how will that affect, as you said, the depth? How will that affect the wear and tear of this defense?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that everything they've done has been designed to mitigate that, whether that's risk in a game or whether that is, you know, testing depth or putting too many snaps on any of these starters. Because again, Ryan Day's not saying it by accident. It's a 16 game season, and it's not to excuse anything. It's an explanation for the way that they're playing and why. And I think if you pay attention,
it's reality.
Like, there are all these, they're not even subtle clues. He's like, it's a full breadcrumb trail telling you why they're playing this way. Now, how much of, so that's what makes it harder to try and get to the bottom of what are the things that he's actually concerned about. Because he keeps saying that he's not with the running game. And, you know, he did reference on Saturday after the game, oh, special team stuff can't really happen.
Well, yeah.
And we all know that.
Yeah.
We're like, I don't know. Like, how can that be corrected during an off week with these 2 weeks? Like, there's a limited window where you actually get to just practice. And in normal circumstances, this is the kind of week and what we thought that game was supposed to be, number one versus number two, best teams in the Big Ten, college football playoff contenders. You'd be spending 2 weeks drilling down on the Nittany Lions.
Good point.
This could be one of those weeks where that no longer applies. And both weeks could be about this is about us, because Penn State hasn't beat anyone in the Big Ten all year, which is a crazy turn of events.
Wow. That's crazy to say. My last thing, it's not a question, it's a statement.
Okay.
If Ohio State wants to solve their special teams problems, I have the solution.
Okay.
You walk into the lieutenant governor's office and you say, we need you back, coach.
Okay.
And there you go.
That's it?
That's it. That's his sole job.
Does he know anything about special teams? Lieutenant governor?
The lieutenant governor, it's a role known to be very knowledgeable in special teams. That's where you look.
Yeah. Only in Ohio, baby.
Exactly. But then you allow him to be there for the speeches as well. Because you pay for the special teams coordinator. You stay for, thank God that I get to be a Buckeye.
I think the guy in charge is pretty good at those speeches too, though.
Oh, he is. They all are. You know who's really good at those speeches too is Larry Johnson. You hear some of these, we got to fight. We got to fight. The chase.
He's very good at
it. It gets me fired up. Ryan's pretty good. Listen, Ryan gets going, that man held the other buck up like it was the Lombardi Trophy. He was so fired up. I love it.
Well, you've held it. It has magical powers.
Magic. Yeah. It's magic.
See? We both knew.
Yeah.
I didn't tell you to say magic.
No. We're just on the same wavelength.
Yeah, we are. That's just why we spend every Talking Tuesday getting ready for Ryan Day's press conference together, bouncing around ideas, getting ready.
Jumping around ideas.
Jumping around. Did you?
Shirtless.
Were you already down on the field for jump around?
Yes. It was very underwhelming.
Even with 20% of the people still in the stadium, the press box was still swaying. Yeah.
I was down.
Now I'm thinking, and I've got a conspiracy theory that maybe they rig up the press box.
Oh, they shake the press box?
To sway so that people will give.
Because down on the field, I was so excited, and I built it up to be one of the greatest things in college football history.
Yeah.
And there were like 8 people, and it was cool. But the cooler thing was them waving the shirts. That was the better moment. There just weren't enough people there.
Yeah, it certainly was captivating the imagination of folks all around Camp Randall Stadium. But again, it's off week, but not for us. We're going to be back in Woody Hayes Athletic Center to hear from Ryan Day later on. As always, I appreciate TV's Adam King helping us get set for that with his thoughts and his questions. Before we head in there, we'll have snap judgments afterwards with Berm, and he will return to the beat on Wednesday morning with a stock watch. I know you've all been patiently waiting.
Is he done out of timeout?
He's back, baby.
He's back.
We're pulling him back in, and the rotating is done. So thank you.
Now someone's going to think that's real. He was not in timeout.
No.
He could have been.
Who's to say?
Who's to say?
He's Adam King. I'm Austin Ward. We'll talk to you later.